Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and today's conversation is with Craig Fugate, Administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Dave Abel. Craig, you mentioned before the importance of personal preparedness during disasters. In fact, I think I read where you said folks should have at least 72 hours worth of material in order to help first responders. Would you tell us more about your efforts in emphasizing the importance of personal preparedness and what are you doing right now about that?
Well, again, it looks at the public as a resource, not a liability. And the hard, cold facts are in these very large-scale complex disasters, we cannot reach everybody fast enough. And the more people understand that they have a role to make sure that they have done everything they can to prepare themselves and their family, the better we're going to be able to take care of and meet the needs of those that cannot. There are people, whether they're children in a community, whether they're frail elderly, certain people, whether it's because of they don't have resources, they're poor, or perhaps they have some type of impediment, that maybe a disability or something that requires additional assistance, they shouldn't have to compete with the rest of us for the things that we could have done to prepare ourselves. I look at the public not as a liability, but as a resource. And I look at preparedness as the cornerstone of that. The better prepared we are, the better able we are to take care of our families, the more it frees up our responders to focus in on the most vulnerable citizens. But also, it's an additional resource that we oftentimes have not put a lot of emphasis on, and that is encouraging people to take some additional steps, such as encouraging them to become trained, take first aid courses, get involved in your community. And when disaster strikes and you and your family are okay, check on a neighbor. I'm not asking for people to do radical things. I'm asking people to do what many people do naturally anyway. But I think it's sometimes important that government recognize that being part of the team and recognizing what the public adds and enabling them and empowering them is as important as our catastrophic planning on what we're going to do on the federal side.
You've recognized that social media tools are important to doing this. Would you tell us more about how FEMA is leveraging social media tools?
Again, you know, there's a lot of buzz about social media, sort of like the dot-com boom, where everybody thought if you had the internet, you did something different. And I'm not so much looking at the actual different tools like YouTube or Twitter or blogging, as much as it's really opened up something that government's never had before, and that is actually having two-way conversations with the public. You know, we usually had so many filters or so many artificialities of forums or other things, but think about it. The public can actually now, they have the ability to share information. They're doing it among themselves. And so my quest is, how do we do a better job of communicating with the public? I don't think we can do it one-on-one with thousands, if not millions of people. But obviously, if there's a lot of information coming out and a lot of information being shared among individuals, wouldn't it make sense for us to figure out how to tap into that so we have a better understanding of what the needs are? And again, we're not trying to pry into people's personal lives. We're not trying to look at privacy issues as much as this is stuff people are putting out there. We just want to know what's going on so that we can do a better job of responding and identify what the needs are as fast as the public's identifying it themselves.
So continuing on the point of new tools and technologies, can you tell us a little bit more about the Random Hacks of Kindness Disaster Relief CodeJam initiative and how it brings together disaster relief experts and software engineers to work on identifying key challenges to disaster relief?
The cool part of this was not something FEMA started but got invited into. This was an effort by many of the leaders in technology, bringing together their smart folks and looking at how they could deal with disaster-type environments and the spontaneity of their creative folks of solving problems. And so FEMA got invited. I got invited to go speak to them. And that was kind of again, it's building these partnerships. This was occurring without our leadership, without our saying we need to go do this. This was something the industry was doing, that they saw this need, but they weren't sure quite how to fit in. So they were taking problems that they'd saw or solicited from people and were working on those problems in a very condensed environment across a variety of platforms and across a variety of companies and their experts working to solve problems. So they invited me there, and they said, "What's your issue?" And I said, "I'll give you a very simple one. Personal communication is a very key part of people being able to find out what's going on in their families and let people know they're okay. You know, we talk about disaster preparedness as such a high bar that many people, you know, treat it like life insurance. They'll deal with it when they have to, but they don't really see it adding value to their day-to-day lives. But I said, emergency communication actually does, because how many times have you seen an event occur in your community where people couldn't get through because the cell phone's jammed up and people are no longer in a fixed spot? And if you can't, you know, get information out and let people know, there's a factor there of concern and worry that is undescribable if you haven't been in that situation. Like here in D.C., we had a crash on the metro line. It occurred at rush hour. Cell phone traffic was so heavy that initially many people could not let family members know they're okay, and then people from outside the area were having trouble reaching in and trying to find out if family members are okay or if coworkers or loved ones were okay. We've seen this again in other events that have occurred across the country. And I said, well, here's my idea. What if you guys could build an application that takes and links all of these different social media? People have Facebook and MySpace pages. They have Twitters. They have all this stuff. That instead of me having to go out through all my contacts and send out emails and text messages and update Facebooks, that you could give me a one button that I could update that would do that, but also do some things like the Red Cross has a well-being registry where you can let people know you're okay that are not part of your inner circle, but other people that may be inquiring. So instead of having to update all my devices, could I build a tool that as people continue to use these for day-to-day events, could also use them if there was a crisis or even good news? And so that was just a very simple tasking, and they actually came up with a working prototype of how to do that.
So let's talk about programs, two specific programs in particular, the Individual Assistance Program and the Public Assistance Program. Could you tell us a little bit about each one, and what are some of the challenges that you're dealing in either?
Well, the public assistance program is the one that when people hear that, it has nothing to do with you, the individual. It has to do with your government. And that is the reimbursement program to government for the cost of response, debris removal, and eligible structures and buildings that are destroyed and damaged that are not insured. And those programs are generally a cost share of a minimum of 75% federal, 25% either state and local, however they do that within the governor's plan. Most of those programs are really designed around, it's almost as if you looked at it from the standpoint of it's a federal insurance policy that's not an insurance policy, but there's a lot of oversight required by Congress that, one, there be no duplication of benefit, meaning if you got commercial lines of insurance, you got flood insurance, those have to be subtracted out. The second thing is, not everything that local and state governments do will necessarily be eligible. And it doesn't deal with pre-existing conditions. If your water treatment plant gets destroyed, but it's two times too small, FEMA can't make it the big one you need. It can only pay for what was destroyed the first go-around. So it leads to a lot of frustration with local officials who find it to be a very much process-driven system trying to account for making sure that the federal dollars don't duplicate benefits, that it's only for those things that are eligible, and that it's only for those things that were impacted by the disaster. We're trying to move away from less on the process side to more on the outcome side. But it's a program that is basically designed to help governments recover and rebuild, but not necessarily make them whole. It doesn't deal with issues such as restoring tax base. It doesn't deal with issues such as lost income from various programs. But it is designed to help get critical infrastructure from local government up and running to help pay for response and debris removal. But it is not a program that makes government whole that are impacted. And there are other programs that are effective in that, such as HUD has programs, USDA has programs, other programs that can help governments. So the Stafford Act, first and foremost on public assistance, is to help with immediate response costs, debris costs, and help rebuild infrastructure where there's not insurance. The Individual Assistance Program is a program designed, and again, these are two parts. They're not always granted in the disaster. This is the president's decision based upon the governor's request. Sometimes it's only for individual assistance. Sometimes it's only for public assistance. Sometimes it's both. Individual assistance are grant programs that are designed to help individuals who have uninsured losses that are in the areas of impact. And again, these programs are not designed to make people whole. They're essentially programs designed to provide some grant assistance and some immediate costs. And even though the grant programs can provide upwards close to $30,000 worth of assistance, the average applicant only gets about $3,000. And oftentimes this is for temporary housing, an apartment. This may be for some losses, emergency repairs and other things. But it won't rebuild your home. It will not make you whole. It will oftentimes, again, provide some short-term financial grant assistance. You're not required to pay it back. But it also turns on other programs, such as Small Business Administration, disaster loans for businesses, and also for homeowners. And oftentimes, again, people will qualify for, because of an income test and the ability to repay, that they can actually get more money in the form of a loan from the SBA than they can from the grant program, so they'll be referred to that. There's also some programs for like the Internal Revenue Service, surprisingly, as people oftentimes don't look at them in a favorable light. The IRS has programs in a disaster to help come back and take your losses, and particularly depending upon where you're at in the following year, go ahead and amend your return to get any additional benefits from the taxes you've already paid, or to help you look back in the last 3 years of the taxes you paid. If this is a loss, it's going to be significant enough to income average out. So they'll actually help look at if there is, depending upon where you're at in your filing year, if there's the ability to go ahead and amend your return and get more of your tax dollars back because of your losses. And there's other federal programs that kick in. We have a great relationship with health and human services folks with crisis counseling in the initial phase that we can then give money to the states. Different types of programs that. But again, these are programs that are designed in the very short run to help people get through the immediate impacts of a disaster, but are not designed to make people whole. That's why we put so much emphasis on the need to have insurance, the need to have programs like the flood insurance, where people have flood insurance policies to protect them against these losses. And that in a disaster, that we have to engage with our federal partners early, that the FEMA programs don't provide like a housing solution. FEMA doesn't build houses. We'll provide temporary housing assistance. But if you don't have housing being rebuilt, particularly affordable housing, what you oftentimes run into is what we saw in Katrina. It wasn't that it was a desire to keep people in temporary housing units. It was that there was nothing to move to. The president has directed that Secretary of HUD and the Secretary of Homeland Security work together to develop long-term recovery plans that recognize the Stafford Act was not designed in very large catastrophic events to make communities whole. It works very well in smaller disasters where the rest of the community, tax base, and other things are intact, and we can help them through that response. But in the larger scale disasters, people were overly dependent upon Stafford Act. We didn't have the authorities. We didn't have the programs. And so the president recognizes this and is now directing that we will develop long-term recovery strategies that will incorporate the other federal families with their authorities and their programs to provide more holistic solutions to governors and their local communities. So if we have a large housing loss, yes, FEMA will be on the front end providing temporary housing assistance, temporary housing units, vouchers for rental apartment stuff, but HUD's going to actually be there early to look at what it's going to take to support local and state planning, to look at what will be the housing needs at the end of these programs. So look at FEMA more as a shelter phase, but HUD provides a longer-term housing phase. Well, we've been fortunate in our partnership with HUD for some time, but this is really taking it to the next level from the president's perspective that we've got to make sure that in very complex disasters, we bring the entire federal family to the fight, not just the Stafford Act, recognizing that it was designed to do certain things but was not designed to bring communities back to the level that may be needed in very complex disasters. And again, it goes back to because you have so many small and medium-sized disasters where as complicated as it is, the Stafford has provided an effective tool. It kind of masked the issues that were brought out by Katrina, that the very large-scale events. We were overly dependent upon Stafford and extremely frustrated when we couldn't get where we needed to go, recognizing that that may have not been the best approach, but we better lay this out now and make sure that the rest of the federal family understands their roles and their authorities in those long-term recoveries. So governors and local officials and mayors understand what the tools and resources are as they begin to rebuild that tax base in that community.
What does the future hold for the Federal Emergency Management Agency? We will ask Craig Fugate, its administrator, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.